This is Digital Story Podcast number 849, June 28, 2022. Today's theme is, and yet things still go wrong. I'm Derek Story. As I see it, a major difference between the analog age and the modern digital times is that there are more ways to screw up. There are amazing powers that time can seem to hang in a delicate balance. On today's TDS podcast, I share a few recent examples. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, so this is one of those shows I like to do every now and then, just as a reality check, right? I mean, we get all caught up in the latest cameras and the latest digital this and latest digital that. And for the most part, it is pretty exciting, right? And for the most part, it does make things better for our hobbies, for our professions, for our leisure time. Absolutely, absolutely true. However, at the same time, I think we have to acknowledge that these things can just make us nuts and that digital items, digital tools, have their own set of unique, weird things happening, right? Compared to the analog counterparts that they're replacing. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. In part, this is empathetic. I'm sure you've gone through many of these things yourself, and it's going to be nice to hear that someone else is also having these frustrations. In part, just because we have to acknowledge, you know, that everything, all progress has its own set of trade-offs, and in part just because it's, well, downright fun. Okay, so all of those parts will be accomplished in today's podcast. So I have five things, and that doesn't surprise you at all. And I'm going to start out with one for the Olympus OM system, OM1 camera, because I had a really odd thing happen to me on my latest photo assignment from the junior college. And it's called No RAWs in Slot Number 1. RAWs as in R-A-W-S. So I'm not sure how this happened. And it was really super interesting how I discovered it happened. So I had this big photo shoot on Thursday that I had to deliver as soon as possible. And then I had a very busy Friday where I was out and about. I had another assignment. I had some travel. I had all sorts of stuff going on Friday. So I was going to have to process and deliver the small batch, the social batch, as we like to call it, while I was in the middle of doing all this stuff. So here I am. I was actually on public transportation. I have my laptop. I load in the first card from the OM1. From the shoot the prior day that I got to process and get some socials turned around really quickly. It was the RAW card because I have a two-card slot. So in the first slot goes the RAWs. In the second slot go the JPEGs. The JPEGs mainly as a backup in case something goes wrong. So they're mirrored in terms of the number of images and what the pictures are of. It's just one happens to be RAWs and the other happens to be JPEGs. So I put the card from slot number 1 into the computer, and three images come up. 1, 2, 3. So I'm just kind of waiting, for the rest of the images to come up, the other 180 or so images come up, and they don't come up. There are only three. So then I go to the desktop, I open up the card, and I look in the contents of the DCIM folder, and again, three RAW files. That was it. Well, you can imagine how excited I was at this revelation, especially on public transit, especially knowing that I had to deliver a number of shots to the client that day. So I go, okay, not going to panic, not going to lose my cool here. I put the RAW card back in the little container holding it, and I pull out the JPEG card, and I put it in the computer, and I wait, and all of the images come up, all 180 or so come up. So, first sigh of relief, right? Because I have shots. Now, the thing about this shoot was, it was very contrasty. It was a very sunny, bright afternoon in a very reflective area outside, and there was a lot of contrast. So I was kind of hoping for the raw files just to deal with the highlights and shadows best that I could, but I had JPEGs. And at that moment, I was thankful for the JPEGs. Now, I will say this about the OM-1. Those JPEGs were really good, and actually, it wasn't too terrible. It wasn't too terrible dealing with them. And I had raw files from my other camera, the Pentax KP, so I did not have this misadventure with it. So I did have, you know, raw files from the same shoot on that camera. And what I do is I put the long lens on the OM, right? And then I put the shorter zoom on the Pentax, and then I go back and forth because I don't like changing lenses in the middle of shoots if I don't have to. And actually, the raw files from the Pentax weren't, you know, that much better, in all honesty. So I had what I had, and I was fortunate to have the JPEGs. But let's go back to what happened to the raw files? What happened to the raw files? You know, here I have state-of-the-art camera, and it takes three raw files, and then it stops. Well, I mean, clearly this was operator error. This is something that I did. And especially, as all of you will know, when I'm working in the bright sunlight, this is super bright afternoon sunlight at a pool. It was the opening of a pool, a pool center. You can just imagine how bright it was, and I couldn't really see what was going on in the LCD. In fact, when I reviewed the images during the shoot, because I do that, I look into the electronic viewfinder. I put it in play and look in the electronic viewfinder because I can't tell anything on that LCD in that kind of horrible contrasty light. What I had done, or at least I still don't know what happened to the raw files, honestly. But the reason why I didn't detect it wasn't recording raw files, somewhere along the line, I decided it was a good idea in play mode to look at card number 2, not card number 1. So I made that change, I'm sure, for a very good reason. I just cannot remember what it was. When I'm reviewing the images in the electronic viewfinder, the camera, everything looks great because it's looking at the card that had all the JPEGs, which is where all the images were. Had I been reviewing the raw files, which the way that I should have this set up, right, to review card number 1, not card number 2, then I would have seen that it wasn't capturing the raw files, and I could have figured out what the problem was right there and then fixed it. Obviously, I would have had a little bit of panic as well along with that. This is one of those things where there's really no great answers, right? No great answers. But it did remind me that, you know, I had the JPEG card, slot number 2, as my backup, as my protection. And you know what? It worked. It protected me, and I delivered the shoot, and the images look fine. They look great, in fact. So that part worked. But when I'm reviewing images, then I should review the card that has the most important file format on it, which is going to be RAW most of the time, unless I'm doing something creative. So I need to keep in mind to set that review to card number 1, and then that way I'll be able to tell if something wacky is going on. Regardless, this falls into the category of, you know, here we have these fantastic state-of-the-art photographic tools, and you're having weird things happen like three raw files on a card. I have no idea how I managed to do that. I know I did, but I just don't know. I would have never done that with an analog film camera, obviously. Okay, so that's the first one. The second one is sort of related, and this is something that's happened to me a couple times now because I have the Pro Zooms on the Olympus camera. And they have snap focus. So this one's called snap out of focus. Here's what happens. So I have the cameras on in the case ready to go, and I have just a flip top case so I can pull out either camera if I need it and shoot right away. And that's what happens. You're walking around, you see something, especially when you're on assignment, grab the camera, put it up to your eye and shoot and try to capture whatever it is before it goes away. So I did this. This is the day before. I had no RAWs in slot number one. I pulled the camera out of the bag. I go to capture this decisive moment. I fire off five frames, like that. And they're all like horribly out of focus because somehow I had managed to move the snap focus ring to manual instead of autofocus. And I think that happens when I'm fooling around with the lens hoods. I think that's when I, so my lenses or that lens that was on that camera was in manual focus mode when I needed it to be in autofocus. Now, those of you who are seasoned Olympus folks, right away you're thinking, well, you can disable that, right? You can disable that so that if the ring snaps back, you're still in autofocus mode. And I know you can disable it, but I don't want to disable it because I like using snap focus sometimes. I like going to manual mode. It's a very fast way. Instead of screwing around with the autofocus and trying to get the crosshairs to where you want it to be, sometimes you just go to manual mode, boop, move it just a little bit. You got what you want, take the shot, and then you go back into autofocus mode. I find that faster sometimes. Snap focus is one of those things. What a great idea. What a luxury to have. It's a beautiful thing. I love it. However, there are times when it just, you know, I screw up. I move it to manual focus mode. And I fire off five frames of a decisive moment that are very, shall we say, impressionistic. Okay, so that's the second one. Snap out of focus. This third one is trippy. It's called power misalignment. Power misalignment, number three. This happened on another day. I think it was the Friday, right? So it's a Friday. I misaligned both my Apple Watch on its charger, I didn't know it at the time, and my iPhone on its wireless charging pad. I misaligned. So what I mean by that is that when I put my watch in the little charging stand that I have, I thought it was seated properly. And I thought, you know, okay, it's got a full night's charge here. Put it on the next morning. I'm ready to go. Got a big day today. I want to make sure, you know, I have all my electronics ready to go. I misaligned it, so I thought it was charging, but it was not. And this is only, we're only talking about a millimeter's difference between success and failure on this alignment. At the same time, now this is downright magical, I managed not to put my phone on the wireless charging pad properly. And, you know, you kind of have to work to do this a little bit, but not really. I mean, it depends. Those of you that have these wireless charging pads, I'm sure you know, and it depends a little bit on the pad too, right? Well, I managed to misalign both on the same day. So here I am, dun, 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 out in the field, got all the stuff going on, and my watch goes about, you know, 9 a.m, it goes, do you want to go into low power mode? And I'm looking at my watch and I'm going, no, I don't want to go into low power mode. I want you to tell me what the UV is right now because I'm out in the sun. I want to know how hot it is. I want to know what time it is without having to push a bunch of buttons and have this funky Casio, you know, LCD thing come up. And I want to know how many steps I've taken because, you know, I'm walking my tail off here. That's what I want to know. No. It asked me if I want to go into low power, and I'm trying to figure out what the heck. And it was actually a friend said to me, well, he probably misaligned it on the charger. And I go, you're probably right. I probably did do that. And I also managed to do it on my phone. Well, so no watch, no phone. Well, okay, fine. No problem, right? Well, at least with the phone, you know, I had like a little, I had the cable with me, so I could plug it into my laptop when I was on public transit and, you know, get it charged up. So that part, but I don't carry around the watch charger disc thingy with me. So the watch just ends up in my pocket the whole day. And I did have my phone, but I thought it was really interesting that these wonderful intelligent devices can still be, I guess, disabled by human error, this human in particular. So, okay, so that's the third one, power misalignment. Two things, one day. Number four, this has to do with another modern tech miracle, the electric car, right? The VW ID4. And it's called All Systems Not Go, Not Go. So I get into my EV the other morning, and it promptly tells me that the system isn't working properly and that I should contact the dealer. Just gives me this information. She goes, nope. Little yellow wrench shows up. It's got some other, you know, wonky icon. And then it tells me to contact the dealer. Like, wow. Like, this suddenly, I'm not going to work. And not only am I not going to work, you've got to contact the dealer. So I'm going, you know what? This thing is a computer on wheels, right? It is more computer than car. So what do we do when our computers, I mean, we've had computers all these years and they're still wonky as heck, right? They're still wonky as heck. They still do things that you go, you mean, you haven't figured out how to solve that problem yet after how many decades of personal computing? So anyway, so having had and worked with personal computers all these years, I go, all right, I'm not even going to respond to your little wrench here on my screen. What I'm going to do is what any computer savvy dude would do. So I turn off the car. Right, I can just do that. I just press a button and it just turns it off. And I sit there and I check what podcasts I'm going to listen to on the way to work. And I do a couple other things. I let it just stew in its own electrons for about, you know, 30 seconds or so. And then I fire it back up, press the button again, you know, start the car back up. And it's just fine. In other words, I just had to restart. And the car acted like nothing ever happened. And I was just thinking, if you're new to this stuff, if you're new to electric vehicles and, you know, you don't use computers a whole lot and stuff like that, that first message could be pretty daunting, right? I could see getting on the phone, calling the dealer, going through the whole thing, right? So you just say that you go in the house to do it. And you get an appointment set up and all that, and now you're trying to figure out how you're going to get to work. And then you go back out and sit in the car for a minute and maybe just say, well, maybe it'll go. And so you press the button and everything's fine. I mean, that would just drive you out of your tree, right? Okay, electric vehicles, they're nothing but laptops on wheels, and they seem to behave in almost the same way. And finally, the fifth one, I love this one because this one has got me many times, and it's called the internet is broken exclamation mark. When I'm on the road, when I'm in public places, which I am a lot because I'm a photographer, and then I go to check something on my phone and it tells me there's no internet connection, or it just sits there and looks at me and it doesn't load the website or it doesn't load my email. It doesn't do what I want it to do. But I'm looking at the display, and it's got like four bars, right, for my AT&T. It's got four bars, but yet it doesn't want to load anything. What happens is that the phone decides that it's going to use Wi-Fi. It's going to prioritize Wi-Fi over cellular. It does that anyway. It's going to log on to some funky Wi-Fi site that is either a dead end or it doesn't work or it's just, you know, stupid. And since it can't connect to the internet during this Wi-Fi hotspot that it decides it's going to log into, then it decides that there's no internet at all, even though I have four bars. If you haven't figured this one out already, this one is vital when you're on the road. If you're on the road, if you're in a hotel, if you're whatever, and your phone won't load your email or it won't give you a website or whatever, turn off Wi-Fi. If you have cellular bars, which you probably will, turn off the Wi-Fi. Just go to settings, slide the slider switch, turn off the Wi-Fi, and you know what? Everything will work perfectly because it'll go back to cellular like it was supposed to be doing in the first place and load your website or give you your email or whatever. This is just like one of those wild, silly things that phones will do when they prioritize Wi-Fi over cellular, even if it's a stupid Wi-Fi that goes nowhere. All right, so that was my fifth one. Just to put a wrap on this, you know, while all this is going on, all these things, all these anecdotes, I'm telling you, back at my house, right, my quartz Timex is ticking away just fine. My Pentax LX still has a half a roll of film in it that's patiently waiting for me to finish it off. And the Audi A3 in the garage has, oh, about 8 gallons of premium petrol, and it's just ready to blast off. So I guess the moral of the story is I'm beginning to think that in order to survive in today's world, a couple things. First of all, just take a deep breath when something weird happens, because sometimes it's just something weird that you can figure out on the spot if you take a deep breath and stay calm. Second, it's fun to enjoy the convenience of digital items, for sure. I love them. This is called the digital story, right? But I'm thinking that it doesn't hurt to have an analog backup, just in case. Free open source photo manager, Digicam, and that's D-I-G-I-K-A-M, gets a big update. And this is on Petapixel, and I have a link to the entire article there. This is interesting to me because this open source software is free, you know, and the way open source software works, you know, I worked for O'Reilly for years, so that was the watering hole for open source. But basically, developers who are passionate about a project get together and they just create the software, but they allow other developers, other programmers and software types to enhance it, to modify it, and just kind of get it out there so people can keep the ball rolling with it and keep improving it. Digicam is one of those things in our world of photography. And if you don't know about it, let me just read you this a little bit because it's kind of interesting. Digicam, the free open source multi-platform digital photo management application, has released version 7.7 for Windows, macOS, and Linux that adds new features, support for more cameras, and fixes a bunch of bugs. The update to the free professional photo management software comes just a few months after the last major release that brought support for the AOM AV1 image file format, as well as adding, updating, read-write support for JPEG XL image format in all supported bundles. The 7.7 update brings support for Olympus OM1 mirrorless four-thirds system, allowing the new camera and lens combinations to be recognized by the application, bringing the number of supported RAW cameras up to more than 1,180. So, I mean, this thing is not chopped liver, right? Version 7.7 also includes 84 crash bug and maintenance fixes to improve the overall experience performance, including better support for HEIF images from various iPhone cameras, updated operating system support for Windows, Mac, Linux that adds features like Pinterest exporting, Picasa 3 migration, and the ability to export PSD files to Google Photos. I just thought, you know what? For folks that, I mean, this is like for two types of folks, really. There are some folks that are just so fed up with the commercial apps that are out there that we have for photo management. This might be appealing to them. I mean, you can manage your images, you can sort back up, you can export, you can edit them. It shows a ton of XF data. For some reason, that seems very logical to me for this application. And it's just kind of a cool app. Now, it has a nice interface, but it doesn't have the super refined interface like you would see with Adobe or, you know, Capture One. However, it's pretty cool and it's free. So if you're interested in this at all, or you just want to play around with it, and that would be the second type that might be interested. Someone who just likes seeing what's going on with open source software, especially in an area that they're interested in. There's all sorts of links in this article that's on Petapixel, all sorts of links, and you can, you know, download the bundle, you can read more about it. It's kind of cool that these developers have got together on this, worked very hard, have been working on it for years, and have produced something that looks very good. You know, this is one of those nice things in the software world where you go, I'm glad these guys are out there, guys and gals are out there doing this. It just makes me feel good. Here's an interesting article that I found on The Verge, and I have a link to it in the show notes. Apple explains how it's making your iPhone a full-fledged webcam for your Mac. Now, I remember that coming out of WWDC, and I was just kind of going, eh, you know, it didn't excite me that much. And I think the writers at The Verge, that was their first impression too. But then they saw, you know, this presentation at WWDC that delved deeper into it, and they got a little bit more excited about it. So they published this piece here, and now I'm thinking, wow, this is kind of wild. Let me read you it. At WWDC, they spent some time explaining how the new continuity camera feature for Mac OS Ventura will actually work. And it sounds seriously impressive. It could make your iPhone a full-fledged camera for Mac, one that does most everything you would expect and more. Mac OS will detect your iPhone as a camera and microphone, so every camera app should work. While Apple only showed off the FaceTime and mentioned Zoom, Teams, and WebEx during the big WWDC keynote, developers shouldn't need to do anything to their apps for them to work. It's the API, right? You get portrait mode, studio light, and center stage options regardless of the app, too. They're in a control center drop-down menu alongside your iPhone's battery. FaceTime isn't the only app that will magically switch to your iPhone when you plop it down. They demoed it with Zoom, and Apple's offering up automatic camera selection API that other apps can use too. Mac OS Ventura will automatically switch to your iPhone if it's mounted on a stand and either plugged in via USB or detected as nearby using Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. Then there's an API for Apple's nifty desk view mode too. Apple figured out a way to bend and crop images from the iPhone's super ultra-wide lens to let you show off things on the surface of your desk without moving your phone. That's available for app devs too, and they showed it off as a way to present in Zoom. Now, unfortunately, none of these work with the old iPhones that you've got sitting in your drawer. Continuity camera requires iOS 16 in addition to Mac OS 13. And unfortunately, the iPhone 6S, 7, and first gen iPhone SE and earlier won't be getting the iOS 16 software update. That's a shame because it feels like it could be a great way to use an older phone that doesn't have resale value. Still, there are other ways to turn that old spare phone into a webcam, but none of them, I tell you, are very satisfying. So anyway, this is wild. So at first I'm just going, this is not that interesting, right? You know, using my iPhone as a webcam, I explored that many times over during the pandemic. And it just felt, you know, finicky and fidgety and, you know, just didn't work great. But they solved all the handoffs here in these latest OS updates. And they're adding a ton of features. If you think about, you know, suddenly you have all the cool things that you have on your iPhone's camera available to you as a webcam. That's pretty neat stuff. That's pretty neat. So now I've gone over to Team Excited about this, right? And I can't wait to try it out when these updates come out later this year. This could make, you know, your webcam situation more powerful without adding hardly any extra anything at all. I mean, you're already carrying your iPhone with you. You got your laptop. Sounds like you're good to go. Just got to find a way to mount the iPhone. And I'm sure lots of people are going to come up with clever things for that problem. This is kind of neat. I'm looking forward to trying it. This could be my webcam of the future. Who knows? We'll see. I found this cool article about printing, inkjet printing, on the Wandering Lens website. And I have a link to the article and show notes. And it goes through all sorts of stuff that I think if you're interested in printing, you'll find helpful. And maybe it'll tide you over until my online workshop in 2023 on inkjet printing. One of the little gems in this article that I just want to share with you right now, he actually talks about DPI versus PPI. And I thought, okay, this is just kind of a fun little way to end today's show. So DPI, which stands for dots per inch, and that regarding ink droplets on paper. So DPI is for ink droplets on paper. PPI stands for pixels per inch, and that refers to the resolution of digital images and screens. So when we're talking about digital stuff, it's PPI. When we're talking about printing, it's DPI. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of fun. DPI versus PPI. One is for dots, the other is for pixels. One's for printing, and the other is for digital viewing. This article is full of goodies like that. You might want to take a look at it. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. First, a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast and this community month in and month out. They receive discounts on online and physical workshops. They have their own hangout area on Derek's Story Online. And I depend on them, their guidance and their opinions to help us steer the ship in the right direction. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, and I sure hope you are, all you have to do is go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, click on it, take a look around, and then hopefully you will sign up there, and then you get instant access to the online area also just for Inner Circle members at Derek's Story Online. And a big thanks to all the folks who are supporting this community and this podcast. I haven't talked about the donation kit for carefree shipping of found film cameras. If you discovered a film camera or some analog lenses under the bed, in the back of the closet, way in the back of the sock drawer, any of those places, and you want them to be put to use and find a good home, I have the place to do it. I have the film camera shop on Etsy.com, and that's where I take the stuff. I get it all cleaned up. If I can repair it, I repair it, and then I get it into the hands of photographers who really love analog photography, who are excited about it, and are just thrilled to have this gear that previously probably wasn't being used at all. If you find something that you think would be a nice addition to the film camera shop, all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com or click on the link in the show notes. That'll lead you to the contact form. Let me know what you have. We'll take it from there. And if it's something that I can use in the shop, then I'll send you a donation kit that includes a box, a label, a little thank you note. All you have to do is put the stuff inside, tape it up, and then have the Postal Service pick it up at your place. I'll get it cleaned up and I'll get it in the film camera shop. A big thanks to those who have donated their gear. And there's been many, many of our listeners who have done that over the years. And like I said, put that stuff to work. Let's get it back out there and into the hands of photographers who are just dying to use this gear. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. Like I said, I pointed you guys to that article on inkjet printing, and I'm working with Red River Paper, and I really want to do an online workshop in 2023 on inkjet printing. I'm pretty excited about it, and they will partner with me on that. This is the kind of folks that they are. They just support the inkjet printing community, not only with all the supplies they have, the great inkjet paper they have, the accessories that come in handy, ink itself, reviews, tutorials, you name it. They do it. And they've also supported me teaching live as well. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click there and learn about what they have to offer, which is tremendous. And then they also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a huge thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Come back next Tuesday. Until then, stay safe, be creative, get out there and take some pictures. Until next week, have a great week. Bye-bye now.